You are a lifetime athlete, someone who is strong, fast, agile, and durable. And that's why you're listening to this show, the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro, here with episode number 164. And I'm also here with my wonderful and amazing co-host, PK.
Good morning, John.
Howdy, howdy.
How are things?
Things are good. You know, light snow falling. Really looking forward to, as most of us are, an amazing 2020 that certainly has maybe more high points than did 2020. Did I say 2020 or 2021?
You did. Yeah. Yes,
okay, so
that's okay. We know what you mean.
Yeah,
you mean the new year.
Yes, this new year may be even better than the last one. You know, let's just say that and move on, John. And I'm psyched because, you know, we're talking about an interesting topic today that relates to, you know, kicking off the new year. And it also relates to what I've been doing with some of my peeps.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, there's a cheesy way to look at the resolutions for the new year. And there's also just a very practical flipping a new chapter opportunity to really do something new. But I think more than anything, and I was considering this as I was walking last week, the holidays just kind of, you know, throw everything out of whack, no matter what the year, which include 2020. So I think that January can really be just an opportunity to refocus. And that's why I'm excited to talk about what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. And that's this thing, you know, you talk about resolutions and intentions and goals and programs and structure. And then some people say, oh, it's great to, you know, refocus every year. And others are like, well, why aren't you just focused all the time? And, you know, those debates are going to go on forever. But as cute of a term as it is, today we're going to talk about metabolic resets, or specifically the metabolic reset made easy.
Ooh, I like that. I like that. Okay, so how did this come up? Why are we chatting about this? How did this get on your radar?
Well, as we're kicking off 2021 in the Training Tribe, you know, our online group coaching and training community, we're focusing on several elements this month. Well, right now we're in month two of our agility focus block, so the workouts are, shall I say, quite zesty. We've got a lot of variety, a lot of movement competency work in there, and so we emphasize those agility components while we're concomitantly addressing strength, speed, power, and endurance to smaller extents. That's our block periodized system. And we're also using that seasonality principle, as in this time of year, with the short dark days, for the most part, doing briefer workouts. We like to call them micro workouts. Well, we've had some members take advantage of some of the resources that I've been putting out there about you know, how to set up your home gym, home training center. And right now, there are what we like to call the shop ops, or the shopping ops, shopping opportunities. They're going to be brief because there's been such a high demand, low supply on, you know, fitness equipment. But those things kind of popped up, as they always do, the day after Christmas or several days after. And then, you know, the most exercise equipment is bought, you know, right around the new year, and the best prices are generally to be found as well. Mm. So by the time this podcast comes out, unfortunately, it might actually be too late this year because of just the manic craze of acquisition and purchasing that people are doing. But nonetheless, you know, I lubed up the tribe, you know, or before Christmas, and said, hey, be ready, because like if you go to one of your local big box stores and that stuff's out the front of the store, it will be gone in days. And so don't go home and think about it. If you're even remotely considering getting something, snag it. And so a few folks did. And actually a few other folks went home and thought about it and came back and everything was gone.
Gotta listen to Coach Jay-Z.
Well, I try not to waste people's time, money, and energy. So speaking of that, right now, today in the show and also in the tribe, we are focusing on the metabolic reset, in which we come out of that holiday phase, as you indicated, and we just tune up our nutrition a bit and get our bodies to a place where all of those health and performance habits will have the greatest impact.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that super timely. And at any time you're thinking about this, This, I think this podcast and obviously the accompanying materials will just be a resource. So let's just dive into it. What is a metabolic reset, John?
Well, you know, I think it's a cute term, first of all, but to give it some explanation and flesh it out, a metabolic reset is basically just cleaning up the diet for the most part and getting the metabolism back to its healthy baseline. And why we do that is it allows then our training to take or stick, if you will, because we become better biologically within our organism at managing inflammation and having balanced hormones, which is very important for long-term health, as well as optimal fitness and conditioning gains. And we go about it through how I'm doing it this year with our group is just a simple 5-week process where each week or step builds on the previous. And this is not too dissimilar to what we did in a more magnificent fashion in Project Jacked a couple of years ago, you know, which was a 4-month program. But basically I've boiled it all down to 5 weeks of simple steps. And I wrote an article that's, you know, about 2 pages explaining that. So, just kind of looking at, I guess, the concept of brevity this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that. So before we move on, talk to me about this healthy baseline. You said it's involves managing inflammation, balancing hormones. Is that pretty much it? Or when we imagine what a healthy baseline is there more to consider?
Well, I think we always want to give due consideration or respect to stress levels and sleep and appropriate training, all those other things that contribute to health. But when you look at nutrition, it's powerful. It's, you know, perhaps the most impactful thing that we can do over time, you know, affecting health certainly and performance to some extent. So, you know, you can eat your way into better health or you can eat yourself in the other direction. And that's kind of what happens, I think, for most of us inadvertently, let's say Halloween, not that, you know, you're trick or treating and pounding candy necessarily, but let's just say from there till, you know, around about January 2nd. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. I've put on a few pounds. I don't quite feel my best. And I think I'm just going to try to get to those feelings and status again. And one of the best ways to do it is through diet. Now, I still don't think I answered your question because you said, well, you know, what's this whole idea of resetting the metabolism? And basically, if we are, you know, eating and not sleeping well and going to parties and maybe, you know, you're eating things that are rich with sugar and seed oil or what have you, or the alcohol, you name it. Well, the body just, becomes a little less, vibrant over time. And so by restoring those features, everything works better. And generally most people will say that they feel better as well.
Love it. I love it. Yes, that healthy baseline that we're going for. Well, let's just get into it. You mentioned a 5-week process. So are we just going to do this week by week?
Yeah, I figure we just bang it out and say, you know, okay, here's week one right now. So with week one, the main thing that we're doing is just restoring emphasis on the PBD, and as regular listeners of the show will recognize, the PBD is the planet-based diet. That's planet Earth. I always say it that way to make sure that I'm not misunderstood because there is a lot of misunderstanding around those letters out there, believe me.
Absolutely.
Week one, we just say, okay, look, just eat whole, fresh, natural, seasonal, maybe local organic foods, that kind of thing. Just get into that habit, those foods that have minimal packaging and labeling. And that's really the whole focus of the first week. It's like, let's do that.
Got it.
So this is based upon what I call the Jerfmott principle. I love a good acronym.
You do, and this is a doozy, Jerfmott. What is
yes.
that?
So it's capital J-E-R-F, lowercase M-O-T-T, and it stands for just eat real food most of the time.
I love it. I mean, that feels almost like, you know, one of those abbreviations on the periodic table, but Jay-Z style. So what do you mean by that?
So, so we just say, look, you know, we're not going for perfection. We're just going for pretty doggone good, which is a lot of the things that we do, you know, here at the Lifetime Athlete and certainly in the training tribe. But the Jerfmott principle is just say, okay, look, you know, do you have, eggs and meat and fruits and vegetables or, you know, whatever. We're not even trying to say, do eat this kind of food or don't eat that. Just don't eat things that, you know, come in, you know, boxes and packages and have 17 ingredients, most of which can't be pronounced. That's the main thing.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay. What else are we doing week one?
Well, there's an empowering thing that we do called the pantry cleanout.
Yes. Does this include the fridge clean out as well?
Yeah. I mean, it's the fridge, it's the cupboards, the cabinets, you know, wherever one's food supplies are stored. And hopefully not the bunker and you're a big prepper, but hey, whatever. So
the bunker clean out, that's another podcast we'll be doing next week.
Yeah. So this pantry clean out, and it's all based on eradicating to the best extent you can, or just minimizing the presence of the evil triad.
Talk to me. Let's refresh on what the evil triad is.
Okay. So again, this was a popular one with us, you know, talking about the evil triad. And, you know, I think most of the thought leaders out there will recognize that there are three areas in food, if you want to use that in quotations, which may be problematic for metabolic health. And those are, excess sugars, refined grains and starches, and industrial seed oils, those being the big six primarily, which are corn, canola, cottonseed, sunflower, safflower, and soybean. So basically, it's just going through one's food stores, pantry, fridge, whatever, and anything that's heavily loaded in those categories goes away.
Got it. Just we're just eliminating them. I like that.
Yeah. And this is probably going to need to be an explicit episode, because this is based on yet another wonderful acronym, which I picked up actually on a bathroom wall in the 70s. And it's the ESADM dictum, or otherwise known as the ESADM dictum. And that stands for eat shit and die, motherfucker.
Wow. Aggressive. But the principle behind that is, that was a big phrase in those times, but applying it to nutrition, what do you mean by that?
Yeah. So, I mean, hopefully people have a sense of humor and aren't overly offended by me being me, but I did see that often. It was such a popular thing that graffiti artists tended to scribble everywhere, particularly bathroom walls. And, you know, I think they weren't referring to, you know, the future of nutrition and the standard American diet, but maybe a few of them were actually seers and doing so. And so here's the thing, you know, everybody's going to die. There's no denial about that here, but if you eat enough garbage long enough, it's actually going to start to impact your metabolism, and it's going to be deleterious to health. And in all probability, a person who, you know, eats junk for 30 years. I have a 30-year rule. It seems that that's about how long the metabolism can hold up to garbage being thrown at it before it starts to break. Well, they die sooner. And so that's the whole thing with this ESADM idea. It's like, well, you know, you do have some leeway there, some power, where you might be able to either get a few more years out of this journey, or at least make the ones you have a bit better feeling.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, I love, by the way, I just love your sense of humor, John, as all the listeners know, but that's a vivid, I love pulling from this anti-establishment 80s phrase and just applying it to nutrition in 2021. It is, I think it is true though. And you actually witnessed that. And I love putting into week one. Anything else we're thinking about as we kick off this 5-week program?
Well, one last thing in week one is up the pro, pound the pro, baby, pound the pro, bro. You know what I'm saying? So everyone, you know, needs to make sure that we're getting enough protein, because protein is that nutrient that we, from which we build and maintain humans, you know, and our tissues. And roughly it's going to be about 1 gram per pound of body weight per day. And kind of getting away from all this, like, you know, there's too much vegan propaganda right now and people talking about meatless Mondays. You know, how about meatloaf Monday, tri-tip Tuesday, Wagyu Wednesday? You see where I'm going with this?
I do. So talk to me just from a high level, because we dove into this in greater detail, but just that 1 gram per body weight per day, that's just a good benchmark for how much protein you need as a person?
Yeah, that's pretty much true. And again, that's evidence-based. You know, some of the research will say that, you know, a person could be slightly under that and still be doing pretty good over the long term. But for our audience, for a lifetime athlete, someone who's active in training, you know, your protein demand goes up. And that's also true, excuse me, if you are older or trying to lose weight or trying to gain muscle, all of those things exponentially demand a bit more protein. And so, you know, the data is very, very strong there. And the data is also very strong, except for the deniers, that animal source protein is by far superior to that of a vegetable protein.
Absolutely. And here's a little nugget that I've just learned applying some of these principles is that you don't know how much protein you're consuming until you're tracking it, like literally using a tracker. I know, John, you've recommended Chronometer just as an app, but until you do that, you don't know. And I've just found myself in certain times just not getting enough protein. And it wasn't that I wasn't, you know, eating protein or that my nutrition was all over the map. I just was not literally getting enough for my body weight. So that's something that that could be a pearl. Just, you don't know. And if you're just assuming that you're in the zone, track it and find out.
Yeah, absolutely. And those like the food example of that would be, okay, so if we're saying, let's say a person weighs, let's say you weigh 180 pounds, which is about what I weigh right now. So you weigh 180 pounds and you're trying to get 180 grams of protein per day, or I might be trying to do that. Well,
sure.
Then I'm saying, okay, well, if you want to compare foods, you know, like you could say like, you've got either lean steak or chicken breast or kind of a white fish. So those things, the fat content's not too high. I'm just using that because they all compare somewhat similarly.
Yeah.
You're about 8 grams of protein per ounce. And so, you know, if I say, okay, well, in one meal, let's say I want to get 60 grams of protein, which is quite a bit. I could get away with less, but well, then I'm like, okay, well, doing the math, you know, so I got 8 and da da da. And so suddenly, you know, I'm looking at, you know, between 7 and 8 ounces in a serving size. And that's a pretty generous slabo on the old plate. But, you know, I love that. And I think that I don't agree with Michael Pollan, who says, you know, like, don't eat much and make it mostly plants and this kind of thing. I don't think that's correct. I think that's based on opinion more than science. And, you know, the point would be, if we look through the ancestral lens or, you know, try to be evolutionarily consistent, yeah, you know, a good slab of flesh, builds a better beast.
Absolutely. I just did some quick math on that because I was thinking about eggs this morning. And for you to get, this is of course just for the protein, but if there's 6 grams of protein in an egg, you, John, to get your 180 would have to have 30 eggs. And that's just more than you would think, you know. That's obviously, that's an insane, you're not going to do that. However, I think just to illustrate, just track it and then you'll know, and you'll probably be under. Anything else going on that we're doing here?
I think that's good enough for week one. You know, the whole idea is like, okay, let's just kind of get earthbound with our food sourcing and also to stay, you know, evolutionarily consistent.
I love it. Well, what are we doing in week two? What's the big idea?
Okay. So week two, what we do is we say, pull the trigger. Sounds cool. So really this is the elimination portion of this diet or MET reset program. And so kind of have to back up a little bit and say, well, look, if a person, if any person has, and it could be a long list, I'll just give a few. But if you have allergies, if you have gut disturbances, skin rashes, acne, joint aches, brain fog, there's lots more things going potentially that could be going on. Well, you have an autoimmune reaction of some sort. That's undeniable. Now, here's the thing. That can be caused by environmental toxins, you know, even high levels of stress in some ways. But for the most part, food is the most common culprit for these autoimmune reactions, because it's actually, these are the somewhat, you know, foreign chemicals that we're introducing volitionally into our bodies on a regular basis.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense.
So there are these common trigger foods. Thus, you see where we're talking now, pull the trigger, pull them out of the diet. Well, for many people, it's things like nuts, shellfish, dairy, and generally they know that, you know, they either have very severe reactions to consumption or just don't feel well. And so most people just say, those who are, for whom this is indicated, they eliminate those things from their diet. But more sneaky are a lot of these things actually that come from plant products. And I'm not totally down on plants. I think regular listeners will understand that, but I am trying to be up with research and be, you know, have a growth mindset, a beginner's mindset, keep learning. And so, you know, many plants have these lectins or proteins, a type of plant protein, and phytates, which are kind of a form of the phytic acid. A lot of those things are in grains and legumes, and they do tend to promote these autoimmune reactions in many people. You probably heard of the term leaky gut syndrome, very commonly related to, you know, well, gluten for one thing. Gluten is a lectin. And then there's also other compounds in, let's just say what some thought leaders say, the parts of plants that plants probably don't want us to eat too much of. And those are things like oxalates, which you find in kale, broccoli, spinach. There's other compounds, but those are some of the more common ones. And so in saying this, you know, I'm just saying, okay, well, in week one, we got the junk food out. Now we have to start looking at foods that may actually be okay to eat for many people, and we may even consider them healthy, but are they messing us up? And so there's actually, you can go through different, you know, fancy protocols, but the way I like to do it is, if you have any of those symptoms we were talking about, like the allergies or the skin rashes or whatever, it's like, okay, something's going on. So just look for the main suspects. And so, okay, maybe quit grains for a while. Okay, if you're eating a lot of green smoothies, maybe switch to something else. That's about all I'm saying, because usually that's all it takes. And a person says, oh man, suddenly my eczema cleared up. Or I don't have these, like, you know, killer gut cramps anymore, and I don't wake up feeling like I'm wading through quicksand, and I have to squint my eyes, and I can't think. You know, so interesting stuff.
Absolutely, I love how you describe that, because it's it's not that any of these foods that we just talked about, you know, are quote unquote bad. It's just, are they triggering something in you? And the only way to find out is to remove them and see if it clears up. So I think that's fantastic. Any other things, like, as we're just talking about week two, pulling the trigger, that you're considering?
Yeah, just rambling on like Zeppelin, I would say, everybody is a special snowflake. And so sure, you can have kind of classifications in your genomics based on, you know, your places of origin and all that type of thing, that you can be similar to family members or other people. But yeah, you have to do these experiments, and there's no way around it. And so by pulling these trigger foods out of the diet, you know, you just accelerate this process towards resetting the metabolism and the health. And in an extreme level, you know, you could go all the way down to beef, salt, and water, which, you know, those would be the things that a person could live on for quite a while without developing, you know, any deficiencies. And certainly not have problems with. Sometimes you hear about this brat diet, you know, it's bananas, rice, applesauce, and toast or something like that. You know, I mean, whatever. Okay, so that's kind of a carb bomb diet. And, you know, anyone who's got some insulin resistance, it's probably not the best choice for. But again, you know, these are some thoughts. Most people, they're not going to do beef, salt, and water, you know, for various reasons. And, sure, you know, we're not going to convince them. It's a waste of time and energy to try. But, you know, again, this whole thing I find to be so amazing because, you know, I was a vegetable pusher for a long time. I don't think I killed anybody, but I really believed that you just couldn't eat too many vegetables. They were so good for you. And they were, you know, packed with nutrients that you just had to have, or otherwise, you know, you're going to be, you know, so deficient. You know, the newer research does not suggest that to be true. That was just something that we kind of became strongly to believe over time. And so, sure. You know, I want to stay open-minded and say, well, you know, probably eating some amount of vegetables is both good for you and not harmful. But you can take anything too far. That's just that common sense bell-shaped curve of biology. So, you know, thoughts on that. And then lastly, on this week two, pulling the trigger, getting rid of the autoimmune trigger foods is, you know, just get feeling good. And then later you can experiment and kind of add back some of those foods and say, okay, well, this one doesn't bother me. I can have this one back, but it just was that other one and so forth.
Love it. And I like how you said it right there at the end. The autoimmune trigger foods, you know, connecting the dots between a skin rash, for example, and what you're eating. I think that's just fascinating. And it seems like it's something that's like super low hanging fruit since we're doing it in week two. Let's shift gears, keep this momentum going. Talk to me about week three.
So week three, what we do is compress the feeding window. So, okay. You know, I think by now, 2021, make sure I get this correct. You know, everybody's heard about intermittent fasting or time restricted feeding, and some experts will debate they're entirely different concepts, and others will say no, it's pretty much the same. I don't even care. You know, my whole point would be like, look, if you had been eating over like a 12 to 14 hour window in the day, so you start eating at 7 a.m. and you finish at 9 p.m., for example. Let's compress that down. Let's narrow the window in which food comes into the gullet. And so if you move it simply to 8 to 10 hours, so, you know, you might start your eating depending on what your life situation is at 9 a.m. and you're going to finish that up by 5 to 7 p.m. That's probably good enough to get some metabolic gains or benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. So talk to me a little bit more about what we get when we do that or why we're doing it.
Yeah, probably one of the biggest things that we get is we reduce our overall exposure to insulin. And so, you know, insulin is, you know, a hormone that is known to be anti-catabolic, and it's associated with nutrient storage and that kind of thing. But if the levels of insulin are shown to be chronically high, this mm-hmm. does seem to correlate very well with most, you know, disease processes and, you know, kind of like things that are attributed to lifestyle, you know, so it's the onset of obesity, diabetes, hypertension, cardiovascular disease, strokes, cancer, that kind of thing. And so by simply compressing the eating window, we get a gain back, and that's kind of nice.
Absolutely. Well, what are some keys to doing this right in week three?
Eat when the sky is light. And so right now that'll be a push for you and I, you know, where we live, because the number of daylight hours versus darkness is just going to fall into that 8 to 10 hour mark. But when we eat when the sky is light, you know, we have this thing called circadian biology, you know, so the human as a, you know, a diurnal mammal, you know, we're tied to the sun. And so basically our system is actually designed to eat and digest more effectively when the sky is light than when it's dark. When it's dark, we're supposed to be, you know, getting into sleep mode, and there's other processes going on metabolically. The body generally gets a little happier on the inside if it has more time and energy to do those things than to deal with food.
Love it. I love it. What else are we doing?
Well, I'm going to say, let's go down to 2 meals per day. So a couple of things to say about that. You know, we're lifetime athletes, so we're always training, but we're not training extensively and hard this time of year. So, you know, we can do okay on 2 meals per day. It's not like we're going to come up really short in terms of our feeding, but 2 meals per day also gives that added benefit of like, well, you know, even if the window's, let's say, 8 hours, those spikes that you get when you eat a meal, if you only have two of them, even better. And so that's kind of a nice one. And then the last thing I would say, you know, in doing this, well, I don't know that this is an offsetter. It's just an adjunct. And I always like to remind folks this, hey, let's emphasize the dining experience, you know, slow down and, you know, eat in a parasympathetic, not a sympathetic state, and enjoy the food preparation and, you know, sit at a table, you know, with the right kind of lighting. And you know what, it does mean something. It actually has been shown to improve people's health and their body weight just by, you know, eating a meal in, you know, that kind of a sharing social context.
Absolutely. I love it. I think that is all, that's practical, achievable, but also I really like how you emphasize the benefit of what you get and just that insulin consideration is, all those things that you listed out there are bad. And so if this is something that you can do, one can do, any of us can do to reduce those or just sort of combat, I guess, the opportunity for those to occur, it seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah, the cool thing is none of this is hard. And, you know, each week in our master classes in the Training Tribe, we have many topics that we typically will go over. And sometimes we're looking at exercise review, but this month, that's what we're also touching on. So, hey, don't forget, you know, now this week, you know, we're working on this focus and, you know, anybody have any questions about that? And it's good because then you've got that support and that network, in addition to, like, you know, being able to answer, you know, add a comment or ask a question on the forum. So, just cool stuff. So, I'm excited about this. I'm pretty much excited about everything we talk about and hanging out with you, PK. Actually, it's a funny thing. You know, I was listening to a podcast the other day on some topic, and the guy who was talking to the two hosts, and he kept saying their name, but not in a genuine way. I could just tell, you know, it was like he just had this is like some kind of thing you're supposed to do when you communicate with someone. You just keep repeating their name every fifth sentence or something. And he was doing it, and I was so annoyed, I wanted to smack him. Would have if I was in the same room. But anyway, that has nothing to do with talking about week four and what we're going to do in metabolic reset.
That's true, John. So you know, when we say one another's names, it's genuine. I'm not reading it off my note card here, but let us do transition to week four. What is our focus on this 5-week plan? We're getting, you know, we're on the downhill slide now. We're coming towards home.
Well, it's reduced carbs. And so I never cease to be amazed how 79% of people simply blow up at this suggestion.
Yeah, exactly. Like, What do you think that is? They don't want to do it, so they just don't absorb.
Yeah, I mean, my point is, I'm not anti-carb. I think carbs are great, and they certainly have a place in the diet of the lifetime athlete. But you know, a lot of people, you know, have high levels of addiction and defense and adoration around carbohydrates, and for good reason, because of you know, how they impact us metabolically. But in week four, by reducing carbs, what we're doing, I'm not saying go to zero or try to be keto, if you like that word, it's another cute one, just cut back a bit. And here's why. Because we're training somewhat more briefly in the winter, you know, looking at that 3 million years of human evolution when that activity levels would have dipped a bit. So we're doing micro workouts, you know, primitive people were doing that because food availability was low. But ultimately, genetic programming became that there's also a very low availability of carbohydrates in the wintertime. True more here in Montana than at the equator, but it's still true. And we just don't need as many. And so eating a little bit less can help us. And it helps us, again, going back to that insulin, because, you know, even if you're not in quote unquote nutritional or dietary ketosis, you're still improving your insulin sensitivity. And so the insulin sensitivity means that the body actually needs less insulin to get the job done, you know, of what it typically helps us to do. And so then we don't have that super high levels, the chronic levels, the hyperinsulinemia that leads to all these health problems. And so that's one benefit of periodically, especially when training is low, dropping your carbs a tad.
Absolutely. What else are we getting when we're doing this?
Yeah, well, what this does, it kind of helps you flip the dual fuel switch again. So as modern humans, you know, we're coming off the holidays. Carb content was probably high in a lot of foods. We actually kind of lost our ability to burn fat for fuel, whether that's ingested dietary fat, but particularly to access and burn our own body fat. The metabolism will become carb dependent. This is all proven stuff. So by just dropping the carbs a little bit, and then the body's going to say, okay, well, I can burn this fat. You know, I can burn the fat that was in the butter that you ate on something, or it can burn it off, in my case, the gutter, you know, the gut butter, gut butter. That's a good one. I like that. But we upregulate fat burning ability when we reduce carbohydrate consumption. And, where I'm saying it is like, if a person was tracking, and again, I agree with you, you don't have to track all the time, but if you never track, you never know anything. If they were eating 200 grams, go to 100. If you were eating 100 grams of carbohydrate per day, eat 50. That's about all we're saying. You don't have to take it certainly any lower than that to get some of these health benefits.
I love that. And I think that especially connecting it with why we're talking about this right now in the first week in January in a new year, it isn't because of the resolution cycle and you're trying to get views on your blog post. I mean, it really is connected to, you know, the types of things that we do and we put in our bodies over the last basically 2 or 3 months of the year, and why this is a good time to do it. So, John, I love it. Let's take it home strong. As we're getting into week five, let's say we've been really good for the first, we're on plan. What are we doing in week five?
Well, week five is the final week in our metabolic reset plan. So it's a long month. You can see that, where we restrict calories. And we do that subtly, you know, so slightly, not extreme. So just a bit, say by 25%. So here's the example. Let's say you're eating 2,800 calories per day. That's a really nice amount of food. Just take it down to about 2,100 for week five only. And so what that does, because it gets you in that slight caloric deficit, it further cranks up the fat burning aspect of metabolism. But because you're not going down to some, you know, drastic, 1,000 calorie per day thing, that's without deprivation. So you're not going to be exceedingly hungry, not experiencing metabolic slowdown, muscle mass loss. None of that stuff's going to happen, especially over a week. And it enhances the other thing that we want to talk about, not just insulin, which is autophagy. And that's that process of cellular cleanup where the body will, kind of on a cellular level, you know, sweep up debris and, you know, various organelles and cell membrane parts that basically have crapped the bed, and it's time for them to be recycled. That's what we get when we go through this mild caloric restriction.
I love that. What else? What else are we thinking about when we're doing this?
Well, I think the thought is that it's not forever, you know, and so the way this metabolic reset plan works over this long 5 week month is you get to week five and you know what the program is. So it's like, hey, this isn't forever. I'm just doing this temporarily. And man, I feel pretty doggone good. That generally happens if a person is at least, let's say, 81.6% consistent with the things we've just discussed. Well, if I just go right into summing it up, taking it home strong, as you said, and love you, Eddie Money. It's these long-term considerations. So most folks, particularly a Training Tribe member, they can just go back to the week two in this pattern and just hover there. So week two was when you're eating the plant-based diet, you got enough protein, and you're making sure you're not eating the trigger foods. That's it. You know, that's all you got to do. And, you know, you can go for months or maybe even years before you need to do another reset. You know, we basically only reset if things kind of fall off the old wagon. But here's where it gets really interesting. Let's say you have a person whose goal is weight loss, or more effectively fat loss or body composition enhancement. They may want to do several months of cycling through what we did in weeks 2, 3, 4, 5. And what that does is, you know, they kind of compress down and they have experience some weight loss, and then they get, you know, back to week two. So they kind of let up a little bit and then they do it again. That's the way to be successful, both in terms of coaxing the metabolism along in a natural cycle, as well as not letting the mind get stuck in a rut. And how that works best for, again, the weight loss client is we have to keep them training consistently because, you know, we want to have the metabolism idling, but relatively low volume, you know, not these like beat down workouts, kind of big loser, you know, models, because those things not only can they be hard on the body, especially one that's heavier, but they actually they deplete glycogen in the muscles. They overstimulate appetite. They cause compensatory eat back or refeeding. And so I always come back to this point that I call metabolic multitasking. You know, multitasking is just as ineffective inside of our bodies as it is in the workplace. And so your body likes to pretty much focus on doing one thing at a time. And if you've tasked it or given it the assignment, hey, let's lose some weight. It's not going to be happy if you say, let's also gain a bunch of muscle and improve our fitness to the max degree. Instead, the body's going to say, yeah, look, just keep this metabolism going along and we can deal with those things later. Let's get this weight off now.
Love it. That is fantastic advice. And well, let's look at the other side of the coin. But what if you're doing this more as a tune-up than a full reset and you want to refocus back on training or performance?
Yeah. And this is a lot of my coaching clients. And so the people that in particular, you know, I do one-on-one coaching for high performance, peak performance. Eventually they, you know, that comes from hard training. And so what we need to do with those people is put them back in that week two format again. So it's the plant-based diet for the most part, good protein, no trigger foods. And then we got to jack up their calories, probably add more carbs, have more meals, feed through a larger window as much as is possible so that we can fuel that athlete and help them to recover and repair and build tissue while remaining weight stable. That's really the key. And one of the things that gets so confusing from a lot of the bullshit that's out there, you know, this time of year and like the popular magazines and whatever, is the diet that you need to use to lose weight and get healthy. Those are similar things. Whatever your goal is not the same diet that you have for the healthy, high-performing lifetime athlete. And so that's why we are going to feed them more and more often and have some more carbs and all that kind of thing, maybe even more protein because of tissue issues. but this is actually a, you know, it's not just stuff that I make up. You know, there's a thing out there now known as REDS, or relative energy deficiency in sports. And it actually impacts female athletes a little bit more than males, but it affects both genders. And so basically, if a person has all these goals, but they're going along and whether they're purposefully or inadvertently underfeeding, eventually bad things happen. You know, they get exhausted, burnout, injured, stress fractures. Most of it's avoidable if you feed the athlete appropriately.
Absolutely. That is REDS. And I had not come across that yet, but or framed like that. Anything else that we're thinking about as we're sort of just summing this up here? Words of wisdom, perhaps.
Oh yeah. And I would say, I call it this, the periodic strategic refeed. And so as opposed to saying like, it's a cheat meal, I just don't love that term. You can call it a treat if you want, but like every once in a while, whether you see something you want to have, or you just need a big meal or whatever, have what you want. And don't worry about it. And don't self-loathe. There's no guilt, because if most of the time, let's use 87.3%, that is a number I just made up. If you're doing the things we're talking about, that's ideal. You're going to have very little impact on the healthy, durable, beastly human metabolism of a lifetime athlete for a so-called indiscretion. And I don't even think that. So if, you know, if you want occasionally to, you're saying, you know, I just feel like eating a 3,000 calorie meal, eat it, you know. And or if you say, you know, I want to have a day where I do this, or doggone it, after I have this healthy meal, I want the ice cream sandwich, then just have it.
Yeah. And I think that I think about, you know, like I got a birthday dinner to go to in January or something like that, where it's, you know, use that as an opportunity, as a celebration. But I think the most important point is, if you are doing it at that 87.3 scientifically determined number that you pulled out of the top of your head, then those other times, they're just not going to hurt you. But you do need to be doing it at that, you know, 80-20%. To get the minimal impact of that, of whatever this is, this, you know, periodic strategic refeed, as you're calling it.
Yeah. So, wow, PK, thank you so much for being with me today. Just love having these discussions, and you let me ramble and get excited, and I so appreciate that and you. And I want to get this finished up, because I know you've got to go skiing, and I got to get this show out for the masses, because you got to give them what they want. And so I guess for me, in closing, I've got three things to say, and they're this. Hey, engage with us if you're listening to the show and the messages that we give resonate with you, and you appreciate my humor, possibly. Share this with someone you love. Give us a rating, a review, wherever you listen to the show, and make a comment. We care about you. Thank you. If you want a little more out of your health and performance, and so you dig the things we discuss, you might want to take a look at my coaching services, as well as this online group training platform known as T2 at thelifetimeathlete.com. Love to have you if it's right for you. And then lastly, hey, snag yourself a hoodie, a tee, or a tank with one of our inspirational sayings like unleash the beast, athlete for life, or hard to kill. Okay, maybe four things. Stay awesome. Thank you.
Adios, everyone.